Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I'm talking about yesterday, the first real day of the NFL season, and it delivered. Ryan Fitzpatrick shocking the world and outdueling Drew Brees. Patrick Mahomes living up to all the hype. The Steelers and the Browns. Dez Bryant and the Cowboys on Twitter. Any other weekend, any one of those stories would lead this show. But today, that's not the case. Today, it's only about one dude. You know this. Aaron Charles Rodgers. And it's not like I need to say anything other than that. There is your take. Aaron Charles Rodgers. I mean, I don't know what you say beyond that because you already know. You already know who he is, what he's about, and what that guy can do. And if you didn't know before, then you better know right now. Here is a quick recap of his night against the Bears. And it was a tough start. 3 for his first 7, 13 yards, trailing 10-0, and then this happened.
3rd and 9. 4-man rush. Here it comes. Look out. Down he goes at the 25-yard line. Roy Robertson Harris, number 95, with the sack. And that is a sight that has everybody's heart stopping at Lambeau Field. Wow.
Goodness, here it's going to come. Roy Robertson Harris right around there. There was Matt coming there, and you could just tell there was going to be a meeting at the quarterback.
Rodgers came out of the tent, and that's about as bad a sight as any Packer fan can see. So Aaron Rodgers, who signed recently the richest contract in the history of the National Football League, has to come out. Back to the locker room he goes on a cart.
Even if you're a Bears fan, that stinks.
Yep.
Thanks to NBC. Yeah, I mean, there's not a single Packer fan anywhere. Hell, there's not a single football fan anywhere who didn't get sick to their stomach seeing that. Aaron Rodgers going down with a knee injury. That was the ultimate kick to everybody's junk. The ultimate package blast on opening weekend of NFL season. That's no good for anybody at all. He gets carted off the field. And when that happens, you just know he's not coming back. Not that night and probably no time soon. And let's just say that the Packers did not exactly thrive without him. Khalil Mack, more on him later, capped off a monstrous first half with a pick six, and the Packers were down 17-0 under the lights at home. Not only was their night over, but hell, maybe their season too. Because as everybody knows, nobody in that league is more important to their team than Aaron Rodgers is to the Packers. So things look bad. Really, really bad. Nobody expected this guy to come back. Not even his teammates. Backup quarterback DeShone Kizer addressed the team at halftime, and he asked them for their trust. That was the plan for the rest of the night, and really, who knows for how long for the rest of the season. Rodgers' teammates go out, they warm up, and then all of a sudden, everything changes. Aaron freaking Rodgers coming out of the locker room like something out of a movie, except that was real. And he was really in pain. And he was really going to play. And it was really on. I mean, it didn't matter that this guy couldn't even put weight on his left leg or that he could barely move and had to play out of the pistol to limit his steps. It didn't matter that the Packers had never once in their history won a game where they were trailing by 17 or more entering the fourth quarter. That game was over. You knew it. The Packers knew it. The Bears knew it. And Rodgers knew it. Asked later on when he knew they were going to win, Rodgers said this.
Walking out the second half. When I realized I probably should jog. I was thinking about walking from the tunnel out all the way to the sideline, but I figured I might as well jog a little bit to let Doc McKenzie know that I could do that because I hadn't done that yet back in the bowels of the stadium here. And when I got the ovation at that point, I said we might as well win this thing.
Might as well. And then it started with Geronimo Allison.
Rodgers dancing, throwing for the end zone, and it is hold in. Touchdown, Geronimo Allison. This is Willis Reed.
Willis Reed? Nah. Willis Reed moment? Not really. An Aaron Rodgers moment. Because there's only one person on the planet who can make that throw. There are only a couple of guys who can make that throw on two legs, and he just did it on one. That touchdown made it 20-10, Bears. Rodgers then followed that up with a scramble and a toss to Davante Adams that got them to within three.
In the pocket, steps up, shoots it to Davante Adams, and Adams dives for the end zone touchdown.
One of the shiftiest guys in the NFL.
He made a move right there. Chicago, though, had a chance to ice that game with a touchdown. Chicago had a chance to end the Packers, but they only got a field goal because there is no killing what can't be killed. So, Rodgers comes back onto the field. Down six, 2:39 left. First pass, incomplete. Second pass, incomplete. Third pass, legendary. Roll it.
Snap to A-Rod. Rushes on. Has time. Looking. Throws middle. Yes. Got his man. Breaking free to the 50. He may go all the way to the 20 down the right side. It is Randall Cobb to the 5. To the end zone. To the touchdown. Oh, my goodness. Randall Cobb to the lead score.
Unbelievable.
75 yards. And the Packers have tied the game at 23.
Packers radio. This guy ends up buying time on a bad leg, looks off the safety, makes history. Thanks for coming and good night. You knew it was going to happen. You had to know that was going to happen. The most improbable outcome when he was in the locker room became the most predictable outcome when he stepped back onto the field. I'm not even going to say that's why he's the highest paid player in the league. I'm going to say what I said when he did get that contract. He is the highest paid player in the league, and he's still underpaid. And I'll also repeat what I said then, every season, that he does something that you have never seen before. And this year, he did it in week one. I'm not going to remind you that he's the most talented quarterback the league has ever seen. I don't need to. I'll let Kurt Warner, who was on the show last week, tell you that. Or I'll read this tweet from Ian O'Connor, Tom Brady. Quote, Tom Brady once told an NFL coach, if Aaron Rodgers had the Patriots' offensive scheme and institutional knowledge on opposing defenses, he'd throw for 7,000 yards every year. He's so much more talented than me. End quote. Listen, the amazing thing isn't that he did what he did. The amazing thing is that everybody knew he was going to do what he did, and he still did it. The Packers knew it. The Bears knew it. And from the moment he got that ball back down six, that game had only one ending. It was as predictable as LeBron finding a new and different way to crush the souls of the Raptors. You know it's going to happen. It's just a matter of how it's going to happen. Oh, and speaking of LeBron, he tweeted, quote, woke up this morning saying to myself, Aaron Rodgers, you're incredibly good at football, my guy. One of the GOATs. Thank you. End quote. Or to sum it up, to put it another way, let me sum up Sunday of week one with the words of one Conor McGregor. Surprise, surprise, mother bleepers, the king is back.
Surprise, surprise, mother the king is back.
JLC, JLC, really sorry about that. Nice to have you. What's up? Good morning.
No worries. Second time is the charm, I believe.
I hear always. All right, Jason, so you've had slightly more than 12 hours to process and think about what you saw last night from Aaron Rodgers. As you sit here this morning, what do you make of what you did see from him last night?
Yeah, I mean, it was Willis Reed-like, right? It was, you know, Michael Jordan and doing some of the stuff he's done when he's had, you know, whatever, 105 temperature and been under the weather. This is folklore stuff. We have to see how they manage this thing now for the next 15 weeks. You know, you take the bye out of there, which I think is week 7, but it's not like it's right around the corner. And it remains to be seen what kind of an issue this is. I'm sure there's some inflammation in there. I can't imagine he practices a whole lot this week, Jim. It's going to be all about, you know, get him ready for Sunday and prop him up as much as we can. But let's face it, we just saw it in real life. Aaron Rodgers on one leg is damn better than pretty much anybody else on the planet on two legs, you know, with a very few exceptions.
Jason, looking forward to joining us. It's so true. Now, what did you think, though, when you saw him jog back onto the field? At that time, did you feel like that was worth the risk?
At the time, you're like, look, they're getting their brains beat in. They can't block Khalil Mack. If Chicago just runs the ball in the second half, I don't know that even Aaron Rodgers can overcome this, especially against the Aaron Rodgers. Shame on me. I'm sure whatever old takes exposed or cold takes exposed or whatever, the Twitter police will have a lot of fun with my timeline from last night, because I would have said put him on ice and start treating him right now for the Vikings game. But it was clear from his post-game interview, right, that he was having none of that and that you were going to have to literally take his helmet away and shackle him to his locker to keep him off the field. And he obviously knows his body best. But again, we'll have to see the lingering ramifications of this as well, Jim. You know, like, it didn't happen in a vacuum, and it's a long season to go, and obviously there's always risk-reward. But for that moment, I mean, for what he accomplished Sunday night, I don't want to call it miraculous, but pretty darn special.
Clones, how awesome was yesterday? Wall-to-wall football, it does not get any better than that. Except it does, and that's where my bookie comes in. Do you want to take it to the next level? Then you've got to get down. And no better place to get down than with my bookie. Trust me, they are the best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to navigate. Lay down some cash, win big right now. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. This is why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. And they have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code Rome to activate that offer. A dollar for dollar match on your deposit? That is some serious ROI before you even hit the digital window. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code Rome when creating your account to get that bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. CBS Sports NFL insider Jason Locke and for joining us on this Monday morning. And speaking of Khalil Mack, he was unblockable. He was dominant last night. You pointed out on Twitter last night, JLC, that back in February, the Raiders could have had Mack for less than what the Bears are paying him. How much less, and how painful is this going to be for Raider fans going forward?
In terms of the actual guarantee, full guarantee, considerably less, millions less, and also would have been less on the average annual value as well, the per-year basis. But the reality is the counterproposal that the Raiders received from Max Camp back in February was almost spot on to what he ended up getting. And the Bears, in fact, were willing to spend above and beyond that, plus trade the two first-round picks in order to get him. And I'm told had the Jets or had the 49ers, the other two finalists for his services, landed Mac as well, they were prepared to give him Aaron Donald money. So the market was there. It was set. The Donald deal crystallized it. It let the Raiders know that, yeah, you know what, that proposal we've been sitting on for 6 months, that really is probably what he's worth, and we're not going to pay him, and we might as well trade him before the season starts, although I will always say there's no reason this didn't happen before the draft.
We're talking to Jason Lock and Fora. All right, so let me jump around to a few more things. Tom Brady threw for 277 yards, 3 touchdowns. He had 1 pick off a tip. Looked pretty damn good to me, JLC. I didn't see any slippage there. How did he look to you for a 41-year-old quarterback?
He is still smashing Father Time in the face with one of those folding tables that the Bills fans jump through. He's unstoppable. I mean, and even when you talk to people around the league and you look at the Patriots roster and you're like, but they still have Brady. And I don't think he hits the wall right now. There's teams in that division who have actually sort of repositioned their reconstruction to aim for 2019 and beyond, with the thought that maybe reality finally strikes a year from now. But the way he played last year and the way he handled himself in the offseason, you saw no deterioration through the course of a long season. So I don't know anybody who thought he wouldn't come out of the gates firing. We'll see how he holds up over the next 4 months. But you never bet against Tom Brady. I mean, it's foolishness.
JLC, looking at that Baltimore-Buffalo game last night, let me go there next. I mean, you called your shot before that game. You predicted that Baltimore would easily handle Buffalo. They did. My question is this. How did the Bills go from a playoff team last year to losing by 44 in the opener? Is it something that they can turn around quickly, or is this season going to be a big step back?
Well, I think you have to start with who they thought they were last year, which is not a playoff team. And then you have to look at how they got to the playoffs, which took one weird quirk after the next. They were the bottom five or six teams in the league on offense, bottom five or six teams in the league on defense, but they got the right tiebreakers. Andy Dalton made a miracle happen on 4th and 12 at Baltimore. All the tiebreakers fell their way, and they squeaked in. But they've lost talent since then. They know they're building for the long term, so they've continued to trade away starters. I wonder if Shady McCoy is the next to go. I don't really know why you have one of the five highest-paid running backs on a team that, even with him, might go 3-13 this year and is clearly looking beyond even 2019. But I think internally they're realistic about who they are. And while I don't think they're tanking for the first overall pick, I don't think they'll be crying if they get the first overall pick when all this is over, and maybe they stick, you know, Ed Oliver in there in the middle of that defensive line, and you've got Edmonds behind him, and they kind of like the secondary, although it didn't show yesterday. And now you have the makings of a real spine. And obviously the offense is going to live or die with Josh Allen and his development. But I thought the Bills were the worst team in the NFL. I thought they'd get the first overall pick, and we're only 1 week in. But so far, that certainly looks to be the part.
My guest, Jason Lockenfora, for a few more moments. Chelsea, one thought about tonight's game. Go back to the Raiders' defense for a minute. Not great last year, obviously, even with Khalil Mack. Now they don't have him, and now they open up the season against Sean McVay and the Rams. So what kind of a game are you expecting this evening?
Oh, points shall be scored, Jim. I don't think that Jared Goff is a world beater by any stretch of the imagination, but he's a capable, more than capable system quarterback if put into the right hands. And McVay is about the best hands you could be put in. So, and then you couple that with the running game and what they've done on defense, which should provide Goff with some short field, which obviously plays to the Rams' advantage again. I expect them to come in and light things up, frankly. I mean, the Raiders have to hope some of these young draft picks on the back end finally step up. But even if they do, the front seven's been so weakened now that I just don't have a really good feeling about the Oakland Raiders. And I think they will be very much a team in transition probably throughout the entire season.
Agreed. Listen, no way you come on the program and we don't talk a little music. You met up with a legend, HR, the other day. What was that experience like for you? How'd that go?
Yeah, I met him before. He actually lived in Baltimore for a long period of time. You'd run into him downtown every now and again. And saw him play in Baltimore a couple months ago. But he's doing just reggae stuff now with, like, a couple of dudes from Philadelphia, which is where he lives now. And he's always super chill. I wish he would have played a Bad Brain song or two. But who am I to challenge the great HR and whatever set list he puts together, Jim? I was just happy to be there with about 250 other people at some dive bar in Brooklyn. Good times.
That's the best. Who are any of us to challenge what he might do or what he might say? And Jason, listen, I saw the show. I'm going to join up with you all on the NFL on CBS in a couple of weeks. I thought the first week looked great in, like, mid-season form. How'd that show feel to you? How'd that go?
Yeah, you know, it's weird. There are certain times where everybody, you know, we get off set and everybody runs to the green room area where we watch all the games. And, you know, you kind of turn and say, wow, that's a pretty good show. I think it was a pretty good show. And that was one of them. I mean, obviously, the intro with Nate and his rap, I mean, if you haven't seen that, please go check it out. I know it's on social media and on the CBSSports.com website. But, I thought everybody was in mid-season form. You know, we had a pretty good slate of games. We got the national doubleheader this week and some really good games. So, yeah, we're off and running, Jim. We look forward to seeing you in New York, and maybe we'll get to a show together. I'll have to see what I got on my calendar.
Can't wait. It'll be awesome. Jason, great to have you on. Thanks so much. Have a great week.
My pleasure, buddy.
So as I mentioned, if Aaron Rodgers does not go Aaron Rodgers, then the number one topic today is John Gruden, because the Raiders are opening up their season tonight against the Rams. Doubleheader tonight, but that's one of the games. And it was not good for Gruden to be trending on Twitter last night when his team was not even playing. But after the world saw what Khalil Mack can do, then Gruden better get used to it, because Khalil Mack is pretty damn good at football. Like when he made this play with 3 minutes left in the first half.
We're four wide here on third and goal. Again, the pump fake, and this time he will get sacked, lose the ball, and Mack took the ball away. Khalil Mack already paying dividends in his first game as a Chicago Bear.
When you play against Khalil Mack, what do you have to do? You have to help. So they give him some help.
Jams the receiver, simply dismisses the tackle, strips the quarterback, recovers the fumble. Actually, he didn't strip DeShone Kizer. He just took the ball right away from him, like a man taking candy from a child. And he did it in a second. This guy's a blur. 6'3", 250. 6'3", 250-pound blur that you cannot block and you cannot stop. And then, with less than a minute to go in the first half, he chased that with this play.
And this time he's going to go down. And Mack will take it all the way in for a touchdown. How crazy was that? Robertson Harris extracted the ball 28 yards, and Khalil Mack is already the defensive MVP of the season.
Uh-oh! Hey, look, Lawrence Taylor ain't walking through that door, but that's about as close and as dominant a performance to LT as you're ever going to see. That was close. I mean, that was some LT bleep right there. That was Bo Jackson. That was Bo Jackson Tecmo Bowl stuff right there, except on defense. When was the last time you saw a defensive player dominate a half the way Khalil Mack just did? And keep in mind, the same Khalil Mack who missed training camp and is on a new team. You're supposed to need a few weeks to get into shape, get comfortable with a new scheme and a new team, and then start to have an impact. A few weeks, a few games. This guy needed like a few minutes to dominate like he has never dominated before. Hell, when was the last time you saw any defensive player dominate a half like that? Again, miss camp, gets traded, joins a new team, and in the first half, becomes the first player in league history since they started recording sacks to have a sack, an interception, a touchdown, a forced fumble, and a fumble recovery. This guy did this in one half. That's a season for most guys. And Mack did it in 30 minutes after missing almost all of camp. And then after the game, acted like it was nothing at all and dropped this legendary quote, "Cool game, but you got to finish," end quote. And again, he did it on a limited number of snaps because he's not all the way back. He did all of that, and he's still not at 100%. Oh, and John Gruden didn't want him. Get used to hearing that phrase. Just like you need to get used to seeing Khalil Mack and John Gruden trending on Twitter. Because every time Mack gets a sack, Gruden takes a hit as well. When Mack takes down Kirk Cousins or Matthew Stafford, Gruden is the guy who's going to go into protocol. Yeah, I know. You can find a way to defend the Raiders trading Mack. I mean, if you genuinely believe that paying an elite defensive player what he's worth and would rather try to win with depth on defense, I guess I could see that argument. You could at least try to make that argument. But if Mack continues to dominate and smoke guys the way he did last night, you're going to lose that argument. You can't win that argument. What I'm saying is Gruden better go 16-0 this year and win every game by double digits, or else he's going to be reminded about that deal every single week. Because as nice as those two first-rounders are, they're just draft picks right now. Future draft picks do not play on Sundays in 2018. Khalil Mack does. And if he keeps destroying the league the way he did last night, then John Gruden is going to wear that trade for as long as he's in Oakland and even longer. Long after Gruden retires, strangers are going to stop him on the street and say, hey, you're John Gruden. You're the dude who traded Khalil Mack. Nice job, Chuck. Maybe the Raiders thought that trading Mack halfway across the country and to the other conference would make it go away. And if they did, they were wrong. Because Khalil Mack is not going away. Yes, he's a problem for NFC offenses, but he's still a problem for the Raiders. And it's a problem that they themselves created when they didn't have to. Because every time Khalil Mack does something, you're going to hear these four words. Gruden didn't want him. And it's true. Gruden didn't want him. Could have kept him, could have signed him, did not want him. Gruden didn't want him. And now he's got to wear that. Now he has to live with that. Joe Moorhead. Joe, it is really nice to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Great day to be in the jungle. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you on, Joe. Thanks so much. All right, so you beat Kansas State in their house 31-10 on Saturday, and that was the school's first Power 5 road win since 1995, and you did it by rushing, Joe, for nearly 400 yards. You held K-State to over 100 yards rushing, just over 100. I got to ask you, what's it say about the physicality of your team that you can go on the road and dominate an opponent like that?
Yeah, unbelievable respect for Coach Snyder and his program and the things he's done to build that place up. You know, the three words we used to challenge our team this week were discipline, physicality, and attention to detail. And being able to rack up that you know, number of rushing yards and hold them down defensively, I think it speaks a lot for our O-line and our D-line to be able to, you know, kind of physically impose our will on them.
And I know how important that is to you. You talk about that quite a bit. Now, I watched the post-game locker room speech. I loved it. But I've got to know, when you come into a program and you work as hard as you have and your players work as hard as they have in the offseason and you win a game like that, what's the moment like for you and your players?
No, it's fantastic. And ultimately, at the end of the day, as coaches and players, we put a ton of time, you know, into our preparation and into the game. But it is that. It is still a game, and these are still kids, and we want to make sure we don't lose sight of that. And, you know, wins are hard to come by at this level against any opponents. We want to make sure when we get a chance we're celebrating the right way.
Joe Moorhead joining us. Now, Joe, for years now, you go back to your time at Fordham and Penn State. There's been a lot of talk about your offensive system. We could spend the entire conversation talking about that, but one of the key points in the past has been to use the same personnel as much as possible. Can you lay that out for me? How much did that philosophy come about, or how did it come about, and what's the thinking behind that?
Yeah, a little bit of it came from my time that I spent as a defensive graduate assistant at University of Pittsburgh under Larry Coyer, and kind of being on that side of the ball for a year and seeing what goes into the game planning from a defensive coordinator's perspective. But when you keep the same personnel grouping on the field and you don't give the defense an opportunity to sub or change out, it allows you to get into about seven different formations, and it really allows you to concentrate on running the ball and creating matchups in the run game and the pass game. So I think that's been something, in addition to playing with tempo, that we've been able to do very well over the years.
All right, so I'm curious, when you come into a new situation like the one in Starkville, how do you go about teaching that particular offensive system, and what are some of the key things that you want to get across as quickly as possible?
You know, it all started kind of in spring ball, and we wanted to do a whole part whole. And we really want to make sure we're teaching it conceptually. So we were very judicious and methodical in our approach initially, making sure the kids understood the base tenets of it and the foundation, and then just continuing to work to build upon that in spring ball and then during fall camp.
Mississippi State head football coach Joe Moorhead, my guest. Listen, I know you're not going to make it about you, but I think your journey is amazing. You played your college ball at Fordham. It was pretty tough from a wins and losses standpoint.
Oh, yeah, we weren't very good.
No, you weren't very good, but I mean, it's much bigger than you. But then you play for the Munich Cowboys. You come back to the U.S. You play in one arena football game. You get cut at the end of preseason. You go back to Fordham. You're covering squash and baseball for the school paper. At that point, what were you thinking about your future in football and coaching?
Well, you know, growing up in Pittsburgh, and I went to the same high school as Dan Marino, I was hoping to be the next Terry Bradshaw. And when you get to play for the Munich Cowboys and you get cut from the Milwaukee Mustangs, you kind of figured that dream and that goal is pretty much over. So I was an English major, you know, took some jobs writing while I was, you know, sending handwritten letters to all the 1A and 1AA schools in the country. And it was just very fortuitous that, you know, Coach Harris at the University of Pittsburgh, which I went to high school right on that campus, they had an opening for a graduate assistant, and it kind of all just went from there.
All right, Joe, when you wrote those letters, though, to every single Division 1A and 1AA program, what were the responses that you got back?
The first set that I did, which was about 240, were all thank you. We appreciate it. We're all filled up. And some of them I had played against, so there may be a little something, you know, scribbled down at the bottom, handwritten note, and then did the exact same thing again. And I was, you know, living in Youngstown, Ohio at the time, writing for a small newspaper in Columbiana County, and was getting ready to go to church one day and got the call from Pitt. And really, I thought it was one of my buddies, you know, messing around with me a little bit, and it turned out to really be an assistant from Pitt, and drove out there, interviewed the next day, and got the job.
So you got that gig, and then you just start grinding, you work your way up, and eventually you return to Fordham as the head coach. As a Fordham alum, what was it like when you were first named head coach of the Rams?
No, it was surreal and in a lot of ways humbling, because as you mentioned, we weren't, you know, very good on the field in terms of wins and losses as a player there, and always felt the program had tremendous potential. So to be able to help the team and the program realize some of that and the things we did there, you know, 6-5 the first year, then 12-2, 11-3, 9-3, made the playoffs 3 years in a row, had the highest ranking in school history, beat 2 1A teams. It was very fulfilling and gratifying from both a coaching standpoint and from an alumnus standpoint.
Mississippi State coming off a huge win against K-State. Their head coach, Joe Moorhead, joining us. So, Joe, you go from Fordham to offensive coordinator at Penn State before coming to Starkville. You know, the rap on Mississippi State in the past is it's a tough place to win, except Dan Mullen had great success there. The rap at Fordham was it's a tough place to win, but you had great success there. So were there some lessons that you learned at Fordham that you could apply to the job as head coach at Mississippi State?
I think at Fordham and at Penn State, too. You know, when I came in as coordinator at Penn State, you know, we were just coming off of two, you know, six-win seasons and, you know, coming off of the sanctions. And year one there, we were able to, you know, turn into one of the best offenses in the Big Ten and win the Big Ten championship and go, you know, we were really 4 points away from being undefeated last season. So all the lessons I learned at Fordham from a head coaching perspective and then carrying the great things I learned from Coach Franklin as he's continued to elevate that program into one of the top in the country and certainly working to build off of the very solid foundation that Coach Mullen built here. And really looking to elevate the program from good to great, and that's our mindset that I came here and our staff came here to compete for and win an SEC championship. And we talk about championship standard all the time. So Scared money don't make money.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. First of all, scared money don't make money. That's true. But I'm glad you brought up that quote, championship standard, because, and I'm glad you brought up your staff, because there's a guy on your staff that talks about this a lot, and I'm not sure this has worked its way back to you yet, but you've got a guy on your staff who is one of my favorite people ever. And when I got my start way back in the day, Joe, he was literally one of my favorite athletes to put on this show and to talk to, dating back to when he played college ball, dating back to when he went into the NFL. I love this guy. I'm talking about your DB coach, Terrell Buckley. In my mind, an absolute legend. Always will be. He was there when you arrived. You kept him on the staff. What's it been like to work with T-Buck?
No, he's a living legend. I mean, one of the best ever do it at the college level and the NFL level, and certainly having that 13, 15 years experience in the NFL to draw on, and has done a great job at the collegiate level as a coach at his numerous stops. The kids have a great deal of respect for him, and not only can he put the X's and O's on the board and teach them fundamentals and technique, but certainly can draw from all of his experience as a was a great player at Florida State and in the league.
Hey, Joe, he's become really humbled, but, man, God, he used to have this amazing swagger about him.
Oh, he still does.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. Does he still have that? Does he still have that it? When he walks in the room, does everybody turn and look because they know it's T-Buck and they can feel his presence?
Jim, his swag's on 10. I mean, there's no question about that. So ain't no question when he walks in a room who T-Buck is.
Dude, I'm so glad to hear that, Joe. That pumps me up. Listen, he did mention to SI, though, one of the things that he loves about you, he said, quote, he has this saying that we use, a championship standard. Going to a bowl game, 8 or 9 wins, that's awesome, that's awesome. But that ain't what we're about now. End of quote. You mentioned it yourself. Can you lay it out for me? How do you share that vision with everybody else? And when you talk about a championship standard, what are you talking about?
We talk about it all the time. I'm not sure who said, but someone said the price of greatness is responsibility. And we talk about every single person in our organization bearing the individual responsibility to perform at a level in which our culture dictates. And that's on the field, that's in the classroom, that's in the community. It's coaching staff, it's support staff, it's equipment, it's academics, making sure it's either above the line or below the line. And, you know, if we want to bring that first trophy here to Starkville kind of create a little bit of our own history, we're going to have to be operating above the line at all times.
So final thought, Joe, I'm one day at a time, one practice at a time, get a little bit better every single day. I get all that. You've got a process. But when you mention trophies, how quickly can you get the program to that level where you're competing for trophies year in and year out?
I believe we can do it this year. And our kids, they believe it too. Attitude reflects leadership. And if I didn't come in the building talking about it, I've been fortunate enough to win conference championships at the last 4 places I've been as a head coach or an assistant. And if the head coach believes it and that permeates down through the team, they're going to believe it too. And, I think we got as good a chance as anybody.
He's the head football coach of Mississippi State, first season there, and they're coming off a huge win over Kansas State. They're 2-0. Next up, the Louisiana Raging Cajuns on Saturday. Joe, so great to have you on the show. Great job in the jungle, and really nice to talk to you. Thank you.
I really appreciate it, man. Never thought I'd see this day, but thanks for having me on.
Cleveland. How are you all feeling this morning? You know what? Don't answer because I already know. I could sum it up in 3 letters. BGB. BGB. Browns, Gunnar Brown. Hey, look, you know better. You know better than to think that I'm going to come in here and tell you it's all good. You know better than to think I'm going to come in here and hype you up. I'm not going to bother telling you that being 0-0-1 is your best start since 2004. I mean, that's true. That's right. Opening your season with a tie is the best thing to happen to you to start a season in nearly a decade and a half. But I'm not going to go all glass half full here. I'm not going to go with the old, well, the good news is you didn't lose. I'm not going to focus on the fact that Myles Garrett is a monster or that Denzel Ward had a hell of a debut with a couple of picks. I'm not here to make you feel better because you know the truth, because you know football. So I'm not going to BS you. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I'm not going to tell you that a tie is almost like a win and it's better than a loss because you know that felt like a loss. You know it might not go in the books as a loss, but it may as well be because you know you should be 1-0-0 and not 0-0-1. And that there are a lot of reasons why you should be 1-0-0, and only one reason why you're 0-0-1, and that's because of BGB, Brown's Gonna Brown. BGB is the most powerful force on the planet. It changes everything. But for a moment, it looked like the Browns might have changed BGB, finally, because they were down 2 touchdowns in the 4th quarter. They force a fumble. They score. They make it 21-14. The defense comes up big again, forces a punt, which set the stage for this amazing moment.
Taylor looking for the end zone. It is caught. Touchdown,
Josh Gordon.
Great placement by Tyrod Taylor, putting it to the outside. I wasn't sure Gordon was going to be able to come up with this thing, but not only did he catch it, but gets his feet down.
Josh Gordon, if you need him. I'm not sure what's better either, the throw from Tyrod Taylor or the catch from Josh Gordon. It was a monstrous catch. It tied that game at 21 with less than 2 minutes to go. Then it goes to overtime. And it looked for sure like it was headed for a tie. And then Joe Schobert went all Joe Schobert.
Roethlisberger from behind. The ball is popped up in the air. The Browns have it. That's Joe Schobert. Schobert down the sideline. We have a penalty marker down on the far side of the field. That came out after the interception.
I mean, did you see that moment? Were you watching that? Joe Schobert went Joe Schobert all the way down to the Pittsburgh 12. And I'm thinking, holy freaking crap, it's about to happen. Did you see the stands? Browns fans going crazy, dancing, celebrating, high-fiving, hugging strangers. I mean, crying tears of joy mixed in with the raindrops. It was beautiful. It was amazing. Cleveland was partying like they had just won an NBA title or an actual NFL game. And not just an NFL game, but an NFL game against their hated rival, the Steelers. It was right there. It was going to happen. And then the penalty, the flag. Myles Garrett flagged for an illegal block on that return, and it took the ball back to the Steelers 24. BGB, totally unnecessary. Totally unnecessary. Where did that block come from? BGB, that's where it came from. Still, all they had to do was hit that kick, hit that field goal, and it's over. Hit the field goal, they win the season opener. They have beaten a Super Bowl contender. They'd be in first in a nasty division. And suddenly, they're looking really, really good. All they have to do is hit the field goal. It's right freaking there. Roll it.
We're going to try and win it with 13 seconds left to go. Here comes the field goal team, and listen to this stadium. Gonzalez is ready. Hewlett will snap. Snap is back. Ball down. Kick on the way. It got blocked. The Steelers blocked the kick, and it never had a prayer.
Oh. Hell yes, they did. Blocked.
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 Blocked. Browns radio, they did such a great job of setting that up too, didn't they? I mean, they set that up like, hey, this place is going crazy. It's all right there. We got this thing. The snap, it's down. The kick, oh, it's blocked. Browns gonna freaking brown. Browns fan, you've heard me talk about y'all. I've been hyped for y'all. I've been excited for this. I'm not here to hate. I'm here to be real. Browns gonna freaking brown. All they had to do was kick a field goal. And yes, I know the coaching staff had a bunch of mistakes, like starting Josh Gordon when they didn't mean to. What the hell was that all about? Somehow somebody caused a formation group that included Josh Gordon, and he started. And yes, I know the team committed a bunch of penalties. They had a general lack of awareness that does not reflect well on that coaching staff. The coaches do need to wear that. How the hell do you turn somebody over six times and not win a game? And if this was any team other than Cleveland, I would put it squarely on the coaches, because that was one hell of a messy effort, a messy performance. Again, how do you force six turnovers and lose and still only score 21 and end in a tie? How? How? I would not pose a question without offering an answer. How? One answer. BGB. Browns gonna brown. So if you're looking for me to come in here and say, you know what? It's all right. It's actually pretty good. That's your best start since 04. It's not a loss. I'm not doing that. You should have won. 0-0-1 should be 1-0-0. You got to win that game. You have to win that game. Browns fans, you would expect no less from me, I would hope, because I would expect no less from you and your team. I mean, didn't Hugh Jackson say it was going to be the biggest turnaround, the greatest turnaround in the history of sports? Then finish. Make the kick.
Kick on the way. It got blocked.
Oh.
The Steelers blocked the kick, and it never had a prayer.
You know why it never had a prayer? Because it was blocked.
Blocked!
You know why it was blocked? Because nobody could block T.J. Watt the entire game.
Oh.
Kamu Grugier-Hill is my guest. Kamu, really nice to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, man. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Thanks for doing this. Listen, take me back to Thursday night, if you don't mind. In that first series, Atlanta drives all the way down the field. They get to first and goal on the six. They go for it on fourth and goal from the one. Why don't we start right there? What's going through your head before that play?
Well, yeah, you know, going into the game, we knew that Atlanta, you know, high-powered offense. And, you know, a lot of people kind of sleep on their run game, but the run game's the engine that kind of runs there. Earns their offense, so we knew we had to shut that down and practice comfortable with their plays. And what do you know, we kind of saw that play lined up, and I knew it was coming. So that was a big one for us.
Hey, look, you'd done the work, you'd done the prep, you knew it was coming, but still, they hand the ball to Devontae Freeman. You make that play, you tackle him for a 1 yard loss. I mean, what did you see on that play, and how big was it for the defense to start the season off with a goal line stand like that?
Yeah, that was a huge momentum for us. You know, going into that game, the atmosphere was crazy. Our fans were real, you know, wild that night. And I know we needed something to spark us like that. So I think that was just huge, and just kind of kept us pushing through the whole night.
Kamu, that game featured the unveiling of the Super Bowl banner. Now I know you're focused on this season and you're looking ahead and not back, but I got to ask, how much pride is there for you when you look up and you see that banner and you know you were a huge part of it?
It's awesome, man. It's truly, honestly, it's super humbling. And just to know that I'm part of that and part of that team that brought the city the first championship is just, it's awesome for me, man. Can't even lie.
What about the city of Philadelphia? I mean, I'm guessing that going to the Super Bowl last year, you had a sense of how much it would mean to that city and to the Eagle fans to win a Super Bowl. But what was it like when you did win and you felt all that love and all that pride from the city of Philadelphia?
It was, like I said, it was just truly humbling, man. Like, when we had that parade, you had, you know, I had 60-year-old men coming up to me with, like, their parents' ashes and stuff. And you know, like, things like that were just kind of, I didn't really realize how much that actually meant to this city and just how awesome our fans are, man. It's just great to do that for them.
Kamu, I mean, dude, that's, I know you said it's humbling a couple of times. I get that, I think, but I mean, when somebody rolls up on you with the ashes of their parents, what's that like? And what do you say to somebody who does that?
That's what I'm saying. It was just the most craziest experience. I couldn't even believe it. You know, that this team and, you know, meant so much to these people, and that I could be a part of that is just, I mean, honestly, I'm just, it was speechless. I didn't even know how to describe it. And I still don't.
Yeah, right. I don't even know what to ask you about that. That's insane. And even more so when you consider how you got to this spot. I mean, you're with the Eagles and you're making Super Bowl winning plays and huge plays, but we got to go back. If we go back to Hawaii, you were a soccer player growing up. Let me start right there. What position did you play and what did you like? What were you like, I should say, as a soccer player?
When I first started, I was kind of all over. I feel like every kid was. But then when I started getting more serious, I played forward. I liked playing forward. I liked scoring, and that's where I was.
All right, so then in high school, you made the transition to football. What was it that inspired you to make that move, and how was that transition?
I don't know what it was, but, you know, soccer was, like, my main love. Loved the game, but I just wanted to try something different. And, you know, at the time, I was hanging out with all the football kids, and one of my best friends was like, hey, man, you should just try out. And I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. And I guess it was the best decision of my life.
No doubt. Kamu Grugier-Hill joining us on the program. So you only play high school football for a short time, so it's hard to get on the recruiting radar. How did you end up at Eastern Illinois?
That thing, it's a funny story, actually. That same friend had an offer to the school by Dino Babers, and honestly, Dino Babers was kind of just like, hey, do you have anyone else that, you know, that can maybe play football out there? And my friend was like, yeah, my friend can. Come check him out. So Dino Babers came and checked me out and offered me on a spot. And it's just kind of it's just a crazy story, man.
That's a wild story. But then again, you hear that so many times, right, when they're scouting somebody and they end up getting somebody else rather than the guy they scouted, or they end up in both. or both with your case. So you're putting up numbers at Eastern Illinois, but at that point, NFL teams still can't figure out necessarily if you're a safety or you're a linebacker. So since they can't figure out, they just pass on you. Then the Patriots draft you in the sixth round. What was it like going from playing high school soccer to being drafted by the New England Patriots?
That's where it really hit me, you know, growing up watching Tom Brady and all those kind of guys that are on that team is just, that was just like, I was a little starstruck at first. And I mean, it's just, I obviously, you know, played them in the Super Bowl and stuff, but I still have, I still thank that organization for just even giving me the shot and to be where I am now.
You know, I wonder, like, so you were a little bit starstruck, and the whole thing was kind of surreal, but the fact is, they released you. You made it to the final cuts, but they released you, and the plan was to put you on the practice squad, but then Philadelphia grabs you. So what was that experience like?
Yeah, so I got a little taste of how the business works real early. So I came down, like, they released me, and I think it was like 5 hours later, I'm driving down to Philly, and I get here, and that's when I kind of just got a quick experience of what all this blue-collar town is. And you know, I just, it at first I didn't know how I felt about it, but I mean, there's no place I'd rather be, to be honest. This city is amazing and fans are crazy. I love it.
So come on, when you say at first you weren't sure how you felt about it or what to make of it, what did you think when you first got there? Like, what was your concern? What was your initial reaction when you first got there?
It's just a lot different. East Coast, you know, a little different than Hawaii where I'm from. So it was kind of just a little culture shock, you know, just the way the people are, the way things worked out here. But I learned pretty quick.
No, I feel you. I remember the first time, and I'm from Los Angeles. I remember the first time I went to Philadelphia, and I was walking around that town. I'm like, damn, these people are serious, man. This is a very different kind of vibe. Different kind of vibe.
Yeah, exactly. You can just tell the vibe in the air.
So you make your debut in 2016 with the Eagles on special teams. The Browns run a fake punt, which you stuffed. What do you remember about that play?
I remember coming in, you know, first, four days before the game, our special teams coordinator comes up to me, he's like, hey, I don't think you're going to play this game, you know, you're going to be inactive, but just learn to play just in case. And like 2 days before the game, he's like, actually, you're going to be up, so just get ready. And I was like, all right. Luckily, I actually did pay attention to the plays, and I didn't think they actually, you know, he's like, hey, fake punt, just watch out. You know, we'll run this, and sure enough, they come out with a fake punt, and it was just kind of lined up perfectly for me. So it's just crazy how a lot of these things have just fallen into place.
Oh no, dude, your whole journey is amazing to me. I love this, as you can tell. And then you're a special teams legend, and you were named a Pro Bowl alternate last season. Let me ask you this: what kind of mentality and toughness does it take to play special teams in the NFL and to do it the way you do it?
Yeah, definitely. Different type of animal, you know. You gotta, it's definitely a mindset. You gotta go down there, be willing to throw your body around a little bit, and then kind of be sacrificing for your team. So I mean, for me, whatever role I'm in at the time, I want to be the best at. So that was kind of my mindset last year, that's my mindset this year, and moving forward, whatever role I'm at, I want to be the best at it.
Hey, Kamu, before you go, speaking of roles, you showed your versatility last season when you took over as the team's kicker when Jake Elliott was injured against the Cowboys. What happened on that first practice kick you had? And what's going through your head when you come into the game, when you come onto the game or come onto the field to kick off?
Yeah, that's another crazy one, you know, where I hear that Jake's down, so they're like, Donnie Jones comes up to me, our punter, and is like, hey, come get a practice kick. And, you know, me thinking that I know how to do everything, he's like, do you need me to move the net closer? And I was like, no, I can do this. Completely whiffed the net, and I think I hit some fan in the stand. and then 5 minutes later, I had to go out and actually kick one on the field. So I was a little shook, but we got the job done for sure.
You got the job done. So before the start of this season, you were named team captain. What's the honor mean when you consider where you started and where you are right now to be named a team captain? What's that honor mean, and then how do you approach that role as a leader in that locker room?
Yeah, that's another, you know, just like I said, humbling experience, man. It's just for my teammates to look up to me like a captain, and you know, even younger or older guys to kind of look at me and you know, as a leader in this locker room and this organization is it's just amazing, man. It just definitely holds me accountable too, because now I need to, you know, I have eyes on me, and I need to make sure that we can, you know, execute certain things and just be a leader for those guys that need extra help or whatever it is.
So one last thing, to win a Super Bowl, not only in that town, but just to win one, when you think of all the amazing players that have played that game that have never had the opportunity, they never got a sniff, never got anywhere near an opportunity to play for a Super Bowl, much less win one, what's it mean to you to have that?
Oh, man, it's just, there's really no words for it. You know, growing, like, once I started playing football, my favorite guy was Brian Dawkins, and you know what, it's God works in magical ways, and he puts me right where Brian Dawkins is, and I get to know my legend, my favorite legend, you know, personally. And for him to not even have a Super Bowl is crazy, man. I honestly have no words for it, and I want to keep him coming.
I think you put that perfectly. That is so well said. For you to look up to a guy like Brian Dawkins and know that even Doc, who's got the yellow jacket right now and who laid it all out there for that town and that city, and they love him, and you have something that he doesn't have, and you looked up to him, that is amazing. Kamu, great story. I appreciate you taking the time that you took to tell that story. I'd look forward to talking to you, and that's an amazing journey. Congrats to you, and really nice to have you on today.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me. That's awesome.
Good night now!